Okay, good morning to everybody. Okay, so we left off in the previous year. I was trying to put the final touches on the sugya of Chayz of Ineir, which is backpedal just for a moment, get ourselves back into the perspective of Chayz of Ineir. Chayz of Ineir was really not a term that appeared in our sugya per se. The Agamar was really talking about Bittel Barov. It was the Rosh who introduced us to the concept of Chayz of Ineir, because the Rosh made the following observation, that according to his theory in Bittel Barov, Isser Nepach, Leos Heter, once Bittel takes place, it should be done forever. The Isser should be gone, never to be heard of again, and it really shouldn't make a difference if more Issa falls in. If it's Mutter, it's Mutter, finish Isser Nepach, Leos Heter. So that was the Rush thought that didn't should have been, but then he quickly turned around and he said, no, it's not true, and he brought you a assortment of riots to that effect, that there is a principle called Chayz V'Neir, that even though right now, the Issa is Nepach Leos Hefter. It was Batul Barov, or in some cases, even Bishishim, or some cases, even Mayab, Masai, whatever the numbers were. But if the numbers get undone at a later point, so be it. So they get undone, and the Bittul is Batul, and that's what's called Chayz V'Neir. And we had other Rishon who disagreed with the Rush to different degrees. There was one view of the total other extreme of the spectrum was the Ravid, who says that Chayz V'Neir just absolutely doesn't exist. There's no such thing as Chayz V'Neir. The rule that carries us through these sugyas is what's called kama kama batel. Once the davar asr is batel, it's all finished. It's history. It says the Rav to such an extent with kama kama batel that even if the subsequent iser is added on to and it gives off time. So I had a little bit of trade chicken soup fell in my potato soup, it was batel, and now more chicken soup falls in, batel, and more falls in, batel. You keep on saying batel, batel, kama kama batel. Even though by the time you get around to eating the soup for dinner, it tastes like absolutely trade for chazer soup. So doesn't matter, says the Ravid. That's the din, the kama kama batel. So those are the two extreme views. Then we had in between views. Somebody showed him walking a tightrope and saying sometimes kama kama batel works and sometimes chayz v'neir carries the day. What are the criteria? So we saw two different approaches. Somebody showed him drew a distinction between is there tam or is there no tam. That was Ramban's view, that if there's nesidas tam, that we cannot ignore. Anything else we could ignore. We could ignore other numbers. We could ignore no shishims. I'm sorry, no. We could ignore no rows. We could ignore no mayas. We could ignore no messiahs. Those numbers don't really destroy taravas. But the minute that you have a mimish and amino with a nicer tam, tam kikar, tam labotol, the game is over. And then we saw a fourth possibility that the Magon suggested, and the other Rishab subscribed to, is that the answer to the question, when do you say Chayz V'Neir, when do you say Kamka Batel, it all depends whether you have a Deraisa issue or a Derabantik issue. If your problem is a potential Deraisa, then on a level of Deraisa, there's no such thing as Kamka Batel. If all you have is a Derabantik Chumra on you, then we could discuss it. Then it could be that we could ignore Chayz V'Neir. So again, every possible nuance in Rishab. How do we pass in Halacha? Depends who we are. So we take a look at the fifth of the Marmakamos. If you take a look at the fifth of the Marmakamos, it's a Ramah. So Ramah, you're a deus, and it's a test, and Vav tells us, Issa Shen is Batel. Anytime you have an Issa that became Batel, you go and try about Shishim Genegdo. For example, there were 60 corresponding to it. Now the Ramah is not going to bother talking about Meya for Truma. There was very little Truma taking place in the Krakow. Ramah is not going to talk about the Orla until he had Kerem in 15th Poland. That wasn't the number one issue. Ramah is talking about regularly Surim, about a little bit of Chel, a little Chaz, a little tray for food got mixed in. Coach Rai Shish, but he connected. So the Shia of all these things is Shishim. But he says, and then an hour later, some more Issa falls in, a classic Shaila. Says the Ramah, Chayz V'Neir V'Nesar. Says the Ramah, Chayz V'Neir. And then the Ramah goes on a rampage about Chayz V'Neir. Lo shta min b'mino, lo shta min b'she'in amino. Lo shta yavesh, lo shta lach. Lo shta neidu b'nesayim, o lo no de b'nesayim. Says the Ramah, it doesn't make the slightest bit of difference what type of taravis it is. Min b'mino, min b'she'in amino, yavesh, lach. But it doesn't matter whether you knew about the taravis, didn't know about the taravis. The reason why the Ramah makes that point, that's going to, we'll get to that at the very end of the sugya. So the Rabbah says, basically, across the board, Chayz V'Neir, Chayk L'Yav, Chayz V'Neir carries a day. Right out of the Rush. This is right out of the Rush. Not a great surprise. The Rabbah generally followed the Chachmei Ashkenaz. This was This was indicative of the Shittas HaRash, which was basically that the Ramah considered to be the authoritative view. And Chayz of Neir is Chayk Yav across the board, no exceptions. It wasn't even Goyrus to Raivet, he's not even Goyrus to Ramban, the Gros, none of the Chilukim make any difference as the Ramah. Chayz of Neir across the board. Notwithstanding what the Ramah says, the Shach is not 100% sure that that is true. Shach, if you take a look at the sixth of the Maamar Kamos, the Shach says that not everybody agrees. And if you take a look four lines from the bottom, the Chendas Arayvit, all of a sudden the Arayvit makes it Chesem Eisen. Shevi'a Ramban Maran Tzimla Sechaz Badazara, Farash Vitor Sabayas. Gedol Bizumash Badas Arayvit, Yafil Anon Minatayim, Eno Chos Vanessa, the Kamu Afil Badav Ashina Sintam, throws the Shach in the parentheses. That if you go down the route of the Arayvit proper, so the Rabbi was the greatest anti-Rashi. He was the greatest extreme. He was the greatest Mekel. And says the Shach, that far I'm not going to go. V'av heim lo pliki shamalov. Even all those Rishonim, the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ramban, all the Rishonim who quoted the Rabbi, argued with him. The only reason why they argued with him is El Amitam, the time of Labotil, Raya Tam Nergush. Because the Tam can be tasted, and when there's taste, so somehow we can't ignore taste. So comes the Shach and saying, we don't want to go as far as the Rabbi. The Rabbi was really a Das Yochid. Yeah, that was no question in the previous year. That the Rabbi very much was on his own in terms of being naked, even in this Das Yochid. But the fact that all the other Rishonim machtavek the Rabbi, but not entirely. They didn't completely refute the Rabbi. They just said, how can you be naked when there's Tom? Implying that if there's no Tom, maybe we can be naked. Maybe the Rush is not absolutely correct. Maybe there is a principle of kama kama batal. It's not as inclusive as the Raivit took it to include, even in case of Nes and Tam. But short of Nes and Tam, maybe we're in business. And now the Shach calls another Kinesh. Comes here the Shach and says, "Ve'afilu b'min b'mino d'leik al meka b'taima, mikomachom kem shenofo sham shir b'chdei diyoif taim b'shenegdo b'yanamino osu ha'kem shen." The Shach quotes that if it's a min b'mino, where there's no Tam, so it sounds like if we're willing to meet the Ravid halfway, we're willing to be lenient, at least when there's no Tam, let's be maker by Min Bemino, not so fast. Because we know they were gozer, Min Bemino, Atum Mimishayna Mino. But that gezer, as we spoke about so many times, is only made by Lach Balach, not by Yavish B'Yavish. That's what the Shach could conclude. Bashenki and Yavish B'Yavish, Min Bemino. If you have a Tarobis of Yavish B'Yavish, Min Bemino, so there's no Tam whatsoever. There's no Tam, there's no gezer of Tam, nothing. You have your mamish and three salamis. Three salamis on the table. Two of them are kosher, one straight. They get mixed together. I have no idea which is which. It's an epic yoseter. Another tray for salami falls in. Mutter. Another one falls in. Mutter. Says the Shach. Says that there's nothing to worry about. He said there's no tam because there's no cooking. There's no gezeira because there's no cooking. There's no mixture. There's no lach balach. What is there? It's plain and simple. It's an epic yoseter. Guess what? When you have a plain and simple is it epic yoseter, yavish b'yavish, Min Bevino, the Shach is Mekil against the Ramah. So the Shach is basically passing like the Ramban, pretty much like the Shittas Ramban, that Tam we're not willing to be Moichel on. But anything short of Tam, we're good to go. Gezeiros of Tam, we're going to be nervous about. But if there's no Tam, there's no Gezeiros of Tam, then we're good to go. So at the end of the day, even the Machlekes and all the nuances of Rishon that we had on Wednesday, we still don't have absolute clarity. The Shittas keep on still coming back. Time and time again, we have with all the sugyas and all the mishnayos and all the rayas, we end up with our four basic shitas. When do you say chayz v'neir? When do you say kam kamav batal? According to the Ravid, you never say chayz v'neir. According to the Rosh, you always say chayz v'neir. According to the Ramban, when there's time, you can't, but otherwise we can negotiate. According to the Grub, by the Araisas, we have to be nervous, but the Rabbanans, we can be made. So there's one last nekuda of the sugya. It's not a one-minute nekuda. It's probably going to take us to the rest of the shiur today, maybe even to next week. And that's almost like a curveball that the Rishonim threw into the sugya. That even those Rishonim who are big believers in Kama Kama Batal, even the team which are not subscribing to the Rush, not the Ramah camp, those who are willing to accept Kama Kama Batal to some degree, even they agree that the buck stops here. That there are certain types of how the Tarobos is playing out. And here, I'm not referring to Yavish B'Yavish versus Mebemino versus Lach Lach. I'm talking about that. I'm talking about the way the Tarobos is presenting itself. the tzur that the Taromus was taking that just does not lend itself to kama kama botel. And the question is, what does that mean? How could a Taromus present itself in a way that would not be acceptable? So that we begin the seventh of the Rambam Kamotz. It's a sugya that we spoke a little bit about because it comes up in a few different places. It's actually really a sugya in Hilchos Kelayim. It's a sugya that appears in Maseches Bava Kama Daf Kuf Amud Aleph. It appears really in two places, in Bava Kama Daf Kuf and in Vasta Beis. We're going to pick it up from Bava Kama Daf Kuf because that's where the Tosfos is. So the seventh in the Rambam Kamos, the Gemara is quoting actually Mishnah from Maseches Kelayim. The famous sugya Mechitza Kerem Shem Mechitza. So the Mechitza Kerem means as follows. The Torah says that you're not allowed to plant grains and vineyard and your grapes together. That's called Kiliya Kerem. And if you plant your wheat and your barley, multiple species in the vineyard, not only did you violate Nisrul or Sizul Chakam Chakalayim, but actually the resulting produce will be also, whatever grows, it's not going to look any different. When grapes and wheat and barley grow in proximity to one another, they don't come out a different plant. It all looks the same. The grapes look like grapes, and the wheat looks like wheat, and the barley looks like barley. But it's still awesome in their eyes to do it. And if you do it, that's called the Nisr, it's awesome, Achila, awesome, and etc. So the din is that they're all complicated sugyas of Mishnayis, Maseches Kelayim, but in order for permit the planting of things, quote unquote, together, they can't literally be planted one on top of another. You have to make some kind of a hefsek between them. And there are different sugyas as to what constitutes a hefsek. One of the things that's a really good hefsek is a mechitza. If you have a wall in between where your wheat is planting, where your barley, where your grapes are planting, so that's okay. Even though Tosfos already points out, even though it's a little bit strange because agriculturally, the roots are still mixing underneath. The walls are going down to the center of the earth. The wall is above ground, and the roots are obviously mixing below ground. So you have this big mix-up, this big chillax, so to speak, taking place under the ground. So Tosfos, that doesn't bother us. That doesn't concern us, la'alaha. Because the nature of the Yisro Kelayim is, it's an Yisro of Tarevis, an Yisro of Erevin. That's what the Targum Uncle says on the word Kelayim. It says, it's translated to mean Erevin. So I always ask the trivia question. It's from last week's Parashat Kedoshim. What pasuk does the Torah use a word three times? That's the name of a Masechta. And the Targum uses another word in that same pasuk three times. It's the name of another Masechta. The answer is Kelayim. It says, so each time that the Torah says the word kelayim, so the Targum translates kelayim to mean erevin. Erevin means mix up, means mixing together. So the word kelayim translated in Aramaic means erevin. So the Taisus points out that the only time there's an Israel kelayim is when it looks ba'urav. It gives off that impression of being a balagan. It gives off, you walk past the guy's vineyard, you say, Gavalt, there's wheat flying all over the place, there's barley planted, all that, Gavalt, that's what the Torah says you're not allowed to do. But if you come by and you see, I don't see anything. I see a very nice Masudar area. I see a vineyard on one side. I see a field of wheat and barley on the other side. It's great. So that, the Torah says, is okay. And how do you create that separation? It's almost like Erevin. A mechitza, you put up a wall. It's interesting because the Gemara says the first paragraph was Erevin, that many of the halachas that govern Hilchos Erevin, our Erevin, Chitzos and Shabbos, are actually identical or almost identical to the sugyas of Kelayim. And in fact, the overwhelming majority of the sugyas that revolve the principle called Tzuras HaPesach. The Pesach is the makeshift walls that we do when we build an Erevin town. So nobody walks around building walls. We're not building fencing in cities today. What we do is that we put up poles and we connect wires on top of the poles. And the good news is we don't even have to do it because the telephone company did it for us 100 years ago. So we just have to make sure that those poles and wires meet the halachic criteria of being a tzuras HaPesach. Not every pole and every wire is kosher, depending on how it's constructed. So that's why we still have a lot of work to do in Erevin. But the basic idea of Erevin is invoking the idea of a tzuras HaPesach. And a good part of the sugyas of tzuras HaPesach appear in the sugyas of Kiryat Kerem. The Gemara tells a story about there was once a fellow who was trying to plant his wheat on one side and his grapes on the other side. And instead of building a wall, it's more expensive, he just strung a string across. He put up two poles, he put a string across. The Gemara said, that was good. The Gemara said, that was fine. And then the Gemara goes to discuss the intricacies of Hilchos Tzuras HaPesach. So a lot of the dinim of Tzuras HaPesach, as we practice it today, Hilchos Erevin happened to come from the sugyas of Maseches Kelayim. There's a lot of interplay between the two sugyas. So here the Mishnah tells us that if you have a mamash mechitz, you have a mamash wall, that's great. It's great until there's a pierce in the wall, until there's a break in the wall. So now what do you do? I have a mechitza, but I have a piritza in the mechitza. So actually the Gemara tells us also in the first breath of Erevin, that many of the halachas of piritzas that govern walls for kilayim are very, very similar to halachas of piritzas that govern walls for Shabbos. So there are a whole series of sugyas. Let's say I have a wall, I have an area that's completely surrounded with walls, surrounded with Tosa Besavs, and part of the wall falls down, or one of the Tosa Besavs falls down. So how much of a piritza can I have in my Erev? How much of a piritza can I have in my Mechitza Sakarim? So the Mishnah tells us Mechitza Kerem is a difference. So it happens to be that this wall broke down, and it broke down to the point where halachically it's considered to be parutz. So it's considered to be that it doesn't exist, and now I have a huge problem again. Now I have wheat on one side, I have grapes on the other side. But they are two different people. So I'm growing grapes, and you're growing wheat, and now the Mechitza Kerem falls down. So Omolo Gedor. So the Beis Din says to the owner of the Mechitza Kerem, we assume that the Kerem is the problem, it's a whole nother sugya, but we say to the Bala Mechitza Kerem, we say, you better fix your wall. Nifritza Omolo Gedor. And then presumably he fixed it, and he did a little shabby job on it, and it broke down again. So we say to him again to fix it. Every time the wall falls down, we say to him, you better mend the wall, better fix the fence. It falls down again, fix the fence, whatever, every time. That guy gets tired of it. Come on, I'm speaking already. I'm not fixing the fence anymore. Beis is not going to catch me anymore. And he decides not to fix the fence. I raise a kiddush. What happens is that anything that subsequently grows becomes kiddush. Kiddush doesn't mean kadosh in a good way, it means kadosh in a bad way. That the whatever the subsequent about the grows becomes also, that becomes trait, becomes kilei kerem, the chayav echiyusa. And now we turn around to the baal hakerem, we say to him, you just caused a big hefset to the other fellow because his wheat just became also b'hanor. And so kozman, that he was trying to fix the fence, that's a detail, nuchas kilayim, kozman, that you're trying to get rid of the kilayim, you try to put up the fence, so then the din of kiddush doesn't apply. The minute that you are the siyashim, and the minute that you give up hope, and you stop trying to rectify the problem, then the Isurim b'diyav of Kilayim kick in. And at that point, if it begins to grow, it becomes Asur. Your grapes become Asur. His wheat becomes Asur. And now another shot we throw you. You become obligated to pay for the damage that you just caused because you just caused somebody's loss of his wheat field. So you have to pay for that. That's the reason why this sugi appears in Babakama, the Kof, and Babas, the Beis. Because now this din of kilayim is going to impact the nidim amunis. So it's an important sugya, very, very big sugya in nidim amunis, but kamed afkuf, why exactly are you chayef to pay for this? This is, you're an adam hamazik. That's what we say in the sixth pasha. Umaka nefesh beima yishamena. That if a person strikes somebody else's animal, kills somebody else's animal, they have to pay for it. That's the source of an adam hamazik b'mechaveiro. So the Gemara quickly tell us that doesn't only apply to a guy who kills an animal. If Reuben backs his car into you, so he smashes into your car, you're a makadev, Reuben's a makadev, and he has to pay. If a person comes and takes somebody else's item and destroys it, so they have to pay. They're a mazik. So the Gemara says, this is also called a mazik. The Gemara raises the question, why is this a mazik? This is so indirect. So this is not like taking an animal and killing it. This is not like smashing your car. This is, I planted my grapes. And I'm draying a cup when the basin tells me to fix the fence. And I'm lazy. I just say, I'm not going to fix it. The basin's never going to catch me. No one's going to know the difference. So the verse says, no, you're another mamazik. The verse says, really? That's another mamazik. That's gorein. That's a causing. That's an indirect damage. Are you chaya for such indirect damage? So the Gemara says, it's actually look like it's a terem. It may under Rabbanah. And this is part of a very, very big sugi Masechet Bava Kama called Dina de Garmi. The Gemara seems to say that sometimes gorein is chayim and sometimes grama is potter. It's a major, major, major machlekes of Rishonim. How do you explain that phenomenon? Is it chayav or potter? Is it a machlekes? Are there rules? Is it the rices? The rabbanon? Or the klolim? That's a tremendous, tremendously large sugya in Bava Kama about the intricacies of this sugya. So that's one issue why we're not even sure why the guy's chayav in the first place. Number two is that even if you want to say that the damage was done quasi directly, but this is spiritual damage. This is not physical damage. Who says that I'm chayav on spiritual damage in the first place? Let's say if I take your truma and I make a tome, am I really chayav for that? So the Mishnah says yes, sometimes no. There is says there are also a complicated sugya, the fifth preface of Gittin. So this statement of the chitza kev shenifritza is loaded. And the yeshivas, they could sit on this sugya and become kufa for weeks. Not even on the kilayim part of the sugya. Forget about the kilayim part. Forget about the yisvet. Forget about our sugya. What about all the Nezikin aspects? The Din of the Garni and the Grov of Nezikin Fatar and Hezek Shere Nekbar, their Isis, their Abad, and Kedosos, Din. There's a lot about this topic. But we want to extract the Yerdea part of the topic. We want to extract the Chulun part of the topic. We want to extract the part that's relevant for us. So we take a look at the eighth of the Ramakavos. Rabbi Tam has the following observation about this Mishnah. So Rabbi Tam says, in the eighth of the Ramakavos, it tells us Kufa Bebeis. Rabbi Tam is Farish. The Lachi Noka Trey Zimnei. The Lashon of Mishnah is very strange. The Mishnah started out by saying, the wall fell down, and then we told him to fix it. And presumably he fixed it. Then the wall fell down, and we told him to fix it. What does the Mishnah tell us twice? What does the Mishnah simply say? If it's an omel gador, nisyash ben avlo gadra. He didn't listen to us the first time. Why the necessity for the redundancy to say, it fell down, and he was a nice guy the first time. It fell down the second time, and now he got lazy. What do I have to tell, have to hear what the person's psychology was, why he did or didn't listen to us? If the punchline of the Mishnah is that when your wall falls down, you're not fixing it up, you create kiryat karam, and now you're chayv subsequently in Nuchas Bava Kama, Nuchas Mazik in the Bay, why the need for the redundancy? Then Atam says to tell me as follows. When the Mishnah said that once it starts to grow, we have a problem, how much does it have to grow to be a problem? So we know that Kilayim only asers in 200. We've learned this already. That if I have a taroz, I have a mixture of a little tiny drop of Kilayim that get mixed up in a huge double shell heter. If there's less than 200 of the Kilayim, everything's okay. Kilayim is botel, not the rov, not the shishim, not the meb, but echad b'masayim. So it comes to the Tav and says, obviously, when the Mishnah says that it starts to grow, it doesn't mean a minuscule growth, because the minuscule growth is going to be botel. Because here I have a big, big, big piece of wheat, a big, 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 big grape, and I have a little bit of tosefes that was done by the kilayim. The first part that grew, the wheat originally that grew when the mechitza kerem was intact, was a davra mutter. So you have to envision that almost like you have to look creatively as a tarobas. Rabbi Natam couldn't get the model of tarobas out of his mind. So Rabbi Natam said, when you have a stalk of wheat that's growing, up until now it was mutter. And now a little bit of trefa wheat is growing, namely wheat that's growing in the state of kilayim is growing. So that's the lack equivalent of a little bit of kilayim falling into a big mixture. So that should be both of the Messiah. You're right. It's exactly what the Mishnah says in other places. The only time that the subsequent growth becomes usur, if it's already started to grow so much, and it's now more than a sign. So up until now, say, behet there, it was 10 inches long. And now it's 10.2. So you have to figure out 0.2. What's the ratio of 0.2 to 10? So 0.2 to 10 is way more than a sign. So therefore, Rabbi Tam said that now we understand why the Mishnah speaks about the lashon of omelo gnifitz omelo gdor twice. So Rabbi Tam says, go back in time. So Rabbi Tam afarsh alachid of a trace of mashvina shem yesh tesefes masayim bei mashahosif kishenifitz rishona ubei mashahosif kishenifitz shnia the aim it starts from lesser. Says Rabbi Tam, the need to highlight nifitz omelo gdor to say is to tell us each breach of the mechitza and each fixing of the mechitza is a separate unit. And let's say, for example, the mechitza fell down and a minuscule amount grew. And that minuscule amount was botel b'masayim. So even if the guy was lazy, but it's still mutter, nothing happened. And then eventually he fixes it. And then it falls down again, he's lazy again. And again, each time a minuscule amount grows, says Rabbi Natan, the minuscule amounts of kilayim are not mitzaref together. You know why? Says Rabbi Natan, the kama botla. Says Rabbi Natan, Kaba Botel saves the day. This is where our part of the sugya now enters into the fray. Says Rabbi Natan, as soon as you fix up that fence, the tarobus is over, the game is over. And now we immediately bring in our measuring rods and we look how much trefus, how much kilayim we added in. Guess what? A tiny, tiny amount, Baruch Hashem, we could breathe a sigh of relief, Botel b'masayim. Next week, the same thing happens and we bring in our measuring rods again. Says Rabbi Natan, we bring in new measuring rods. We do not calculate it. We do not add what happened before because kama botel doesn't require us to do so. Kama botel. What are we not saying, says Rabbi Natan, in effect? We're not saying chayz v'nei. So Rabbi Natan is buying into kama botel. But now Rabbi Natan turns the problem on its head. He says, wait a second. He says, if I'm really right that kama botel is true, so then why is there ever a problem of Kiryat Kerem growing together. If I have my grapes on one side of the fence, your wheat's on the other side of the fence, and the fence falls down, and I'm dilly-dallying, I'm lazy, I'm not planning on fixing it, and it starts to grow. How much does it grow at first? Your wheat doesn't grow overnight. It doesn't grow in 1 second a million times. It grows a minuscule amount. In theory, what should we say at that point? We should say, well, that minuscule amount, we should stop the clock right now and say, mutar, because it's batul b'masayim. And then a split second later, a drop more grows, we say, batul b'masayim. And another. And now when we reach the over masayim point, we should say, well, kama kama batul. If Rabbi Natan is willing to say kama kama batul when the fence was fixed and we stopped the clock and kama kama batul, what's preventing us from saying kama kama batul if the fence was never fixed, if we never stopped the clock? Just simply kama kama batul. So that's what Rabbi Natan says, no. You can only say kama kama batul when there was a hefsek berotayim, when something physically stopped the game, when the clock stopped. We assess the numbers. We don't kapaskin that it's batel. Al zeh nemar kama kama batel. But Rabbi Natan says at the end of the second line, "Vabi alba kilayim nesar b'masayim." The layam meaning called purtak shugadim is batel. You don't say kama kama batel because there was never a stop. And now Rabbi Natan says, he goes back to the Gemara of Edizor that started the whole ball rolling. Remember, Rabbi Dimon, Rabbi Yochanan, the other day had this din: if you pour a tray for wine into your pin of kosher wine, Rabbi Yochanan was the first one to say kama kama batel. At the end, we don't follow that because of Edizor is different. But says Rabbi Natan, wait a second. According to my theory, that you only say kama kama batel when the clock stops. That doesn't sound like the clock stopping. That sounds like a guy's pouring wine. Ongoing pouring. Why isn't the ongoing pouring the lach equivalent of an ongoing growing? Says Rabbi Natan, wrong. Mefarsh Rabbi Natan, but the pasuk psuke. You mistranslated the word ma'ara. Ma'ara doesn't mean a constant flow. It means drip, drip, drip. Aval ma'ara below hefsek, osur. Midadavia kilam in the serpent of sefes basan. Mishigal below hefsek. Boom. Says Rabbi Natan. Godel blood hefsek. That's the key. So Rabbi Natan just threw a curveball at us into the sugis of kama kama batel, into the sugis of chayz v'neir. Rabbi Natan is a big maker. He says that, yes, I'm willing to accept kama kama batel. Yes, it's true. Kama kama batel is going to help me in ochus kelayim. But, says Rabbi Natan, only certain presentations of tarobasim are subject to that rule, kama kama batel. And the cloud Godel, says Rabbi Natan, is it has to be kama, kama bottle. It's got to be kama, so pasuk. Kama, end of story. Kama, end of tarovus. When we renegotiate another tarovus, then we can say, ooh, the previous tarovus was over, kama, kama bottle. But if the first tarovus never ended, it's just an ongoing saga, that is not kama, kama bottle. What creates the end of a tarovus? There has to be some line of demarcation, a physical demarcation. Namely, the physical addition of tray for material has to have stopped. In the case of Kilayim, that stopped when the walls put back up. In the case of Stam Yenim, Yainesech, it stops when the drops stop. Any time that did not occur, that is not even in the ballpark of the Sugya of Kama Kama. That's the famous Shittas Rabbi Natan. And it's based on this that Rabbi Natan now makes the following observation. There's something that, believe it or not, is very, very much relevant to Halacha LaMaaseh for us. It's actually become more halacha l'maaseh for us more than ever before in the last couple of weeks, because it's an intricacy that impacts on hilchos mikvos, and it particularly impacts on a shaila of using other natural bodies of water as mikvos, something which has become a very, very hot topic in the realm of kelim mikvos over the last couple of weeks. I've received many, many shailas that revolve around, in a sense, this Rabbi Natan, apart this Rabbi Natan, about using rivers and using streams and lakes. It all has to do with issues related to Asuki, believe it or not. So Rabbi Natan makes reference to a sugi Masechet Shabbos. Hadi Yom Bamei Isha Shmuel Ovid Labante Bigvos Biyom Nisan Shema Yirbu Hanot from Alazochalin. Rabbi Natan is making a very, very quick reference to a sugi Masechet Shabbos, which is really referencing a Mishnah Masechet Bigvos as follows: that there are two kinds of bodies of water that one could potentially use for tevila. One is a mikvah, one is a mayon. We sometimes use the terms interchangeably, colloquially today, but they're really very, very different halachically. They're both acceptable, but they work in different ways. A mikvah is literally a collection in the ground of rainwater. I dug a hole in the ground, wait for it to rain, fills up with rainwater, that's a mikvah. Achmayan mikvah bar, mikvah bor mikvah mayim yatohar. That's possible by Shashmini. The models that we do today, 99% of our mikvahs that are built today, are simply doing that. Now again, we've upped it up a little bit. We don't just dig holes in the ground. We dig very large holes, and we line them with very fancy material, and cement, and tiling, and we make it very, very pretty. It's not just a dirty hole of mud in the backyard, but fundamentally, the ikaron, there's nothing fundamentally halachically different between our multi-million dollar mikvahs, which are very, very fancy modern day holes in the ground filled up with rainwater, or the old way of building a mikvah, I mean, old maybe 3,000 years ago, you can hold your backyard and wait for it to rain. But it's the same basic halachic principle. So that's a mikvah. A mayon is an underground spring. A mayon is a natural body of water that we didn't dig the hole. It's just shooting up from the ground, and it's filling up in an area that a person could fit into. That's called a mayon. Like the Ari's mikvah in Sfat is not really a mikvah. It's a misnomer. It's really a mayon. It's a flowing spring. So one of the very, very important differences between how a mayan works and a mikvah works is that a mikvah must be stationary. The mikvah water cannot be moving. Some Rishonim say it's based on a pasuk, Yikavua mayan l'makom echad. It's got to be in one place. There are different opinions as to what the source for this din is, but there's Mishnayos that there's a din that it's called zochel. Zochel means to move, to crawl. So zochelin disqualifies mikvah water, but zochelin does not disqualify mayan water. Mayan is always echlin. If you go to the Ari's mikvah, you know the water is always fresh. It's always clean. It keeps because it's underground spring flowing through the cave. So a mikvah water cannot be zochlin. Pashas bin HaTorah, that would be possible. Whereas a mayon is perfectly acceptable. It's always going to be zochlin. Sometimes it gets tricky. How do you know whether you have a mikvah or a mayon? Sometimes it's obvious. So the Tinek mikvah is a mikvah. It's a holy ground rainwater. Ari's mikvah is a mayon. Easy to tell. What if you have a body of water that's a little bit of both? There's a little bit of rainwater and a little bit of underground spring water. How do you know? So the Mishnah says the answer is whatever the rov is. Whatever the majority is, you could rather begin to see if it's tarov is kicking in now. Whatever the majority is. So the Gemara says that rivers are a big problem because it's not always so easy to tell what is the majority of water in a river. Is the majority of water river rainwater or is it underground spring water? The answer is it's usually a mixture of both and it's not always so easy to tell and it may change from time to time during the year. During the rainy season, there's going to be a lot of rain. If you live in a place like Eretz Yisrael, where it doesn't rain all that much in the summer, it was never rained in the summer, then the rivers, probably in the summertime, are going to be better than they are in the wintertime. And different locations are going to be different. So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos that Shmuel lived in Babel. That in the springtime, so he wouldn't let his daughters use the Euphrates River, wouldn't let them use the Hatros to be Tovelin. Because he was nervous in the springtime, the rainy season had just ended, and all the snow was melting off the mountains, off the top of Turkey, which is where the Euphrates gets a lot of its water from. So he was afraid, so melted snow is like rain. So he was afraid that maybe there was a majority of rainwater. And the problem is the Euphrates River, like all rivers, moves. It's Zochlin. It's flowing downstream. And so Shmuel was very nervous that in the summertime, and you made Tishrei, beginning of the fall, it hadn't rained already for months. And all the snow had melted months before. So then he was much more comfortable letting his daughters use the Euphrates. It was easier. But in the springtime, when he had all the concern of the extra water, so he had to make mikvos, separate mikvos. So he had to build separate mikvos to avoid them using the Euphrates. You get the impression that building a mikvah for them wasn't all that expensive. It's seasonal mikvos. But in the certain times of the year, he let them eat tovel in the Euphrates River itself. So what's the issue? So we have to pick this up with Hashem next week. The issue was an issue of Tarovas. At certain times of the year, there was a concern of more rainwater than spring water, which would pose a problem. The question is, wait a second. How do we get to calculate whether we have more? Are we going to invoke the principles of Kama Kama Botel? Are we going to talk about Chayz B'Neir? Are we going to compare this to Kelayim? Is there a Dover Shel Hefsek? Is there an end of a Tarovas? It starts to get tricky. So Rabbi Natam, who just introduced us this idea that Kama Kama Botel is great, but only when the Tarovus is presenting it in a certain way, Rabbi Natam has a lot of work to do to explain this Gemara Maseches Shabbos. So this is going to become critical halacha l'maaseh for us. It's mamash b'zman hazeh about many, many of the bodies of water that people want to substitute for candle mikvahs may run into problems in terms of this sheet of this discussion, Rabbi Natam. This whole sugya is open this Shabbat Tuesday. We'll go back to a little bit of Hilchos Mikvahs and to kind of put the pictures together, to kind of put the final touches on our sugya of Kama Kama Botel, Chayz B'Neir, and try to get a better idea as to the principles that we start off with Hilchos Kashrus, quickly went into Hilchus Kelayim and now going to make his way back to Hilchus Bigvos and hopefully mention him eventually by the way back to Kashrus again. Shem will have a good Shabbos, but Shem should stay well, and Shem will see everybody next week.
And Shem, what's
the Shabbos here? 9:45 yet. What's the Shabbos here? Those who are coming joining us is 9:45 yet. Okay.
Have a good Shabbos, Rabbi.
Yeah, take care. Those who want, I'm giving a drasha to my shul today at 5 o'clock, a Shabbos drasha. So those want for 10 minutes or so. One.
5 o'clock on the same.
Same Zoom. Yeah. One to pop in for a couple words of the
Thank you.
Take care.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.